Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
We should be able to penetrate the internet.
Do I need to be liked? Absolutely not. I like to be liked. I enjoy being liked. I have to be liked. But it's not like this compulsive need to be liked, like my need to be praised.
Welcome to the Marquee, Dirty 30, here on DVRadio.net.
Oh, thank you, British man. I'm so glad to be back. So glad to be back. I am Marquee Davis here with you. I'm not live. No, I'm not. You know that. But here on WDVR, DVRadio.net, I am back, everybody. Yes, I will explain where I've been and what's been going on, but right now I'm just going to let you know that I'm back. And how can I say this? I posed a question to a lot of my former listeners, or you guys, my listeners, asking you what would be an appropriate topic to come back on and speak about. You know, in today's day and age, we have so many things going on. We have a wall that needs to be built down on the Mexican border so we can stop all of the illegal immigrants from coming to America. We have NFL things going on and stuff of that nature. The Falcons aren't in the playoffs, so I don't care. We have, 28-3. Go ahead and say it, everybody, with me. 28-3, I know. We have a lot of stuff going on in the world. We have Korea not going with the denuclearization that they said they were going to do when Trump came to visit in that historic meeting. We have a lot of stuff going on in the world, but what is really happening here in America? What can we do, all right? What can we think about to try to change some of the mess that we have created? I'm not saying us veterans, we don't really care. I'm talking about the millennials, the politicians. You know, we have a government shutdown going on right now. Why? Because of a border wall and DACA? DACA, the Dreamers Act? This is the things we have going on in this world right now. But one of the things that leaped out to me, all right, jumped out to me when I read this message was talking about racism. I know I talk about it a lot, but, you know, it happens. So what? Talking about racism in the military versus racism as a civilian. Yes, yes, I know. And people can say, well, you know, I was in the military. I only see green. I only see green. And that's one thing that used to always jump out to me as people would say that. And it's true. You know, a lot of us in the military, we don't care what skin color you are. We don't care what sexual preference you have. We don't care, really, because we only care if you know your job. And we care if you do your job to a certain standard or above that standard. That's what we care about. That is what we care about. The efficiency of the soldier, of the Marine, of the sailor, of the airman to do their job effectively and efficiently. That's what we care about. We don't care if you're black, white, red, green, purple, blue. We do not care. But after reading certain articles today and doing some research yesterday, I found that there are still some issues that people believe are in the military. Now, I can only give you my personal experience with racism in the military. That's all I can give you. Your experience may differ. That is like the disclaimer they have on every single one of those Army recruitment commercials at the bottom. Your experience may be different. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I might say something that you never experienced while in the military or you never witnessed. That doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Like, you might say something that I never experienced and I never witnessed. That does not mean that it didn't happen. It just means that we didn't experience the same thing. Now, let's give a brief breakdown of the history, okay? The history of racism in the military. I'm not going to go all the way back to the War of 1812. And I'm just going to go right to World War II, where, you know, they finally started allowing African-Americans to enlist. You know, I mean, not really enlist, but, you know, they were already able to enlist, but they started to allow them to become segregated within the military. And, you know, there were blacks in the Navy Seabees and the Air Force with the Tuskegee Airmen. The Army had only 5 African-American officers at that time. and there were no African Americans that received the Medal of Honor during the war, and the tasks in the war were largely reserved to non-combat units. You know, so, dang, I didn't notice either. I'm reading this now. It says, black soldiers had to sometimes give up their seats and trains to the Nazi prisoners of war. So, you know, racism was still prevalent back then, but that was the 40s, okay? We hadn't even reached the civil rights movement yet, so it's known. We understand that racism would be prevalent in the military and every other walks of life around the world during the World War II era. Now, it also states that it would take around 50 years and a presidential order before the Army reviewed their records in order to award any Medal of Honors to black soldiers. You know, this war marked the end of segregation in the United States military. So in 1948, President Truman signed the Executive Order 9981, officially ending segregation and racial inequality within the military. Okay, that's just a little brief history. Pulled off of Wikipedia. Might be true. Who knows who changed it, but I'm pretty sure it's true. I've said this plenty of times. So I know this is fact. I just had to read it verbatim so that you guys could know where I'm going with this, okay? So 1948 ended segregation and racial inequality in the military, the entire military, okay? So I'm reading, you know, different articles, and I come across this article by Leo Shane III for the Military Times. This was published October 23rd, 2017. So you guys can look up the date, look up the name, and find the article for yourself in the Military Times. The title is One in Four Troops Sees White Nationalism in the Ranks. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? One in four troops sees white nationalism in the ranks. Well, who was polled? How did they get this information? Well, let's just look at the survey audience real quick. Okay, so it was about 80% male and 14% female, and had a mean age of about 30 years old. Okay, so the people who responded to this survey identified themselves as 76% white, 8% Hispanic, 9% African American, 2% Asian, and 5% other ethnicities. So the majority of the people who took this survey were white, okay? Caucasian, whatever you want to call white people nowadays. I know saying white is probably racist, but whatever you want to call them. You know, 9% were black or African Americans or whatever you want to call us nowadays. You know, so it's the article, I pulled up some key points I want to bring up here. So the article pretty much starts by saying that nearly 42% of non-white troops who responded to the survey said they have personally experienced examples of white nationalism in the military versus about 18% of white service members. So that means that 42% of black, Hispanic, Asian, and other ethnicities have experienced examples of white nationalism in the military. Now, I wish the article would go into detail as to how they are experiencing white nationalism, because sometimes you can get soldiers who are upset at a leader who might not be the same race as them because they got yelled at, or, you know, they got a Article 15, and then they want to just say something bad and say, oh, well, that's racist because you gave me an Article 15 because I was late, but Joe Schmo over here, who's white, was late with me, but he didn't get an Article 15. Well, that's because the circumstances are different. I've had to do that before. I've had a soldier who was late three consecutive times, and if you were in the Army, you know if you do anything three consecutive times, you're going to get automatically referred for a company grade Article 15. And I had a soldier who was late two times, and I just had to give him a counseling statement. And so I had the soldier tell me, hey, Sergeant Davis, why am I getting Article 15? But he's not. He was late as well. Well, apparently your barracks lawyer didn't tell you that if you're late three times in a row, it is company policy issued by our company commander that I am going to recommend you for company grade Article 15. Understand what I'm saying? And it boggles the mind. They're like, oh my God, I never knew that. How did you not know that when I briefed you on it? And it's posted everywhere around this bitch. That's what I'm saying, you know? And that can be seen as a form of racism, you know, according to the minds of all of these young folks nowadays who thinks everything is racist. Just because you don't get the same privileges or you don't get the same discipline as another person or another soldier, that does not mean that I'm showing a racial favor towards you or that person. I'll give you a quick story. You know, when I was in the military, when I was, I think I was a PFC, young private first class, I used to have a platoon gunnery sergeant who used to, you know, we make racial jokes. That's just what we did. We was artillery unit. It didn't bother us. We would laugh about it, all of us. You know, we would laugh at it. It wasn't like, you know, he would say stuff behind our backs or have a, you know, we go to the field and have all the white boys over here in this tree line, all the black boys over here in this tree line. No. And that's the thing. People have to understand that the military, yes, you do have people who come in who've never, ever seen a black person before. I know it's weird in this day and age. There are still people in the world who have only seen a black person on television. There are people who've only seen a Latino person on television. It's true. It's true, people. It's true. You know? And so it boggles my mind when people begin to think that, oh, well, there's no racists in the military. Well, there are. You know? But the thing is, many people, 98% of us, I'll go so far as to say, do not care about the race of a person in uniform. We don't. Racism is something that's on the civilian side of the world. Okay? Because on the civilian side of the world, you can just up and fire somebody because, you know, they were late. I'm fired. You know, can't do that in the military. Can't. Certain steps and procedures before you can kick somebody out. And before I kick somebody out, I'd rather try to train them to do the thing properly, to do it the correct way. So that way, I can keep my numbers. You never know what might pop off at any minute. Korea might want us to decide to drop nukes on Korea. Because, you know, North Korea is stupid like that and just destroy the whole peninsula because they don't like South Korea. It's stupid. Or, you know, Russia might decide to invade Poland. Germany might decide to come up with the Fourth Reich. You never know what might happen. So I want to keep my numbers up with the trained personnel I have, not with some newbies from basic training that I have to retrain in the TTPs that we have established within this unit. If that makes any sense to anyone out there listening to the sound of my voice. So, racism within the military is small. I'll say that. I'll say it is small. And let's go back to basic training. Let's go back to basic, everybody. So most of the listeners here are from the Vietnam era to now. Vietnam to now. I don't think we have too many Korean War veterans or World War II veterans listening to us. But most of the listeners to DV Radio from Vietnam to now. So that means that the military was already integrated, right? So, you know, I want you guys to show your hand. Raise your hand if you had a black drill sergeant. Raise your hand if you had never been yelled at by a black man before in your life until you went to basic training. Exactly. I was in the same boat. I had never been yelled at by anybody. My mom, you know, until I went to basic training. Drill Sergeant Bailey, young 21-year-old, 22-year-old drill sergeant, infantry guy, used to chew me out every day. He probably doesn't even remember my face or my name, but I will never forget Drill Sergeant Bailey, black gum, stank breath looking self. I never forget him. Him and Drill Sergeant Lockwall. Never forget him. And that's the thing. I have a comment here. Okay, so let's go here. The New York Times conducted a poll July 26, 2018, asking, how did the military affect your views on race? So this was a comment from some dude, I guess his name was Poole, conducted, okay? So it's a comment from this guy, and it says, as a draftee in the Army from 1967 to 1969, the first thing I noticed about race was the disproportionate number of black NCOs. We still have that to this day, people. It seemed like every sergeant screaming at me was black. When they screamed at you, it was not at a distance. They were inches away from your eyeballs. That was the first time I had a black person scream at me. This was in the 60s, people. After a while, I noticed they screamed at both white and black soldiers equally. Race remained an undercurrent for the rest of my time in Vietnam. Everybody worked well together, and after work, each side went their own separate ways. You see, that's kind of how it works in the military. You know, you go to work, you learn, you train, you do everything together. After work, when you get dismissed, COB, close of business formation, you go your own separate way. I mean, that's like any other job. It's not, I mean, that's no race, you know. That's not race related. It's just ain't like any other job. You go to work, do your job, you go home. That's it. That's how it happens, you know. But this shows, you know, this comic shows, even in the 60s, okay, didn't matter whether you were black, white, brown, green, orange, tangerine, whatever color you want to pick out of the rainbow and say that you are, your skin tone, people, it didn't matter. You got yelled at equally the same because that's the way the military works. Now, this other article that I told you about earlier about the 1 in 4 troops and white nationalism in the ranks, I'm trying to figure out what do they mean by that, because most of the units that I've ever been to, seen, been around, has a large African-American population within them, especially NCOs, especially first sergeants, you know. This is just my experience again, people. And most of the officers were white or Asian, you know. I mean, I'm just going to say it. That's the way it was. Most of the officers were white or Asian. Most of the NCOs, first sergeants, sergeant majors were black or Hispanic. That's how it was in my little realm of the world, in the artillery world. You know, that's just the way it was. I didn't see any white nationalism. I didn't see anybody have, you know, soldiers had Confederate flags, but so what? That doesn't represent or shows that someone is a racist because they have a Confederate flag. Now, I've had plenty of arguments about this with people about the Confederate flag and racism. People say that, you know, what do they call it? Old Glory. What's the name of that flag? The Stars and Bars. The Stars and Bars. I think that's what it's called. I can't remember right now. But that flag, they say, is the epitome of what racism is. And, you know, I've had this argument with Bo and other people about the reasons the Civil War was started. And, you know, to this day, people will still argue about why the Civil War was started, whether it was slavery or whether it was states' rights. Slavery versus states' rights. Slavery versus states' rights. I tell you right now, boy, that the states, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, I'll stop right there. DV6 says he likes when I go into my white boy, old southern voice. I don't know why. It's terrible. It's the most, I do the worst impressions, but I love doing them. So, oh man. But, you know, I digress. You know, seeing soldiers with Confederate flags in their rooms never bothered me. I didn't care because most of them were great soldiers, you know. And then let's look at the flip side of this. Let's go to the flip side of this. You go to a black soldier's room, and you would, you know, hear rap songs with negative lyrics towards white people. Okay, I'm just gonna say it like that. You know, say what's that song by N.W.A.? F the police. Fuck the police, coming straight from the underground. You hear that? You know, and let's look at the police force. It's mostly white people, really. I mean, that's what it is. It's mostly white men. That's what the police force is in the United States, mostly white men. So you have a song that says, F the police, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's okay. But, you know, you have to understand something, okay? And this is what people tend to, you know, confuse things. They try to call everything racist. Oh, that's racist. Oh, that's racist. You don't like that? Oh, that's racist. No, it's not. It's not racist. I was reading a story today about a black girl who scored a 900 on her SATs. So she went to a summer program and came back and scored a 1230, something like that, 1265, something. She scored a higher score, really higher score, about 300 points higher, 1200. So they were like, you know, they flagged her SAT scores and things of that nature. She's down in Miami, I believe, black girl. And the first thing, you know, her attorney is saying is, you know, it's because of her race. And, you know, I'm reading the comments. I love reading comments. And they're all like, you know, well, you know, with that much studying, she might have learned not the patterns, but, you know, the logical decision making that they want you to know during the SATs, because you're not going to remember all of those techniques and things of that nature to pass that test. But you're going to learn, you know, they said she might have increased her score by about maybe 175, maybe 200 points. But 300 points can seem a bit much. You know, that's what they were saying. They said 300 points seem a bit much. And they said the only reason they flagged her, the SAT people, whoever runs that stupid test, which I don't understand why you really need it. But The only people who judged that, who made that determination, said that her questions and answers, her answers were similar to some of the answers, I guess, around her. So they suggest she was cheating. I don't know. But the first thing her attorney said is that, oh, it's because she's black and she made this incredible amount of jump in her score. So it got to be some type of race thing going on here. So the first thing they'd use is the race card, you know. And I believe I'm a black man. All right. I hate using the race card. Race to me saying that, oh, because I'm black, you did this to me because I'm black. Why do we have to automatically jump to that conclusion on the civilian side? You know, and that's what happens to a lot of people in the military. I mean, I used to remember, I used to be NCO2, would go into certain soldiers' room and see the Confederate flag and get upset and be like, oh, what you got that up for? You don't like black people? Like, and I'm like, dude, calm down, dude. You know, it's like, dang, what did he explain to you? This dumb dude right here knows nothing about the Civil War. He knows nothing about, you know, what happened. He's just spinning to you things that he heard, you know, once in a while. He just liked the damn flag. You know, that's like me putting up a Nigerian flag. I've never been to Nigeria, but is that racist because I put that flag up? No, it's not. It's not racist. I might love the culture of Nigeria. I do love the Nigerian food, though. I do. I stayed with my best friends for a long time with Nigerian. I stayed with them for about 2 years. Their mom would cook some of the best food I ever had. But, you know, not racist because I have that flag up. It's not racist because I have, what is the bumper sticker? Not hate, it's heritage, or is heritage not hate, something like that they have on their bumper stickers. It's like, dude, let them embrace whatever heritage they want to, because you want them to accept you being an African-American or Hispanic or Latino person, right? You want them to respect you and accept you. So the first thing you need to do is respect and accept their views, okay? If you disagree, you disagree. That's fine. There's plenty of friends that I have that I've disagreed with, but we still talk to this day simply because we have a mutual understanding that we're never going to agree on that. Cool. But we still like some of the same things. We still hang out. That's not a big of an issue. I can still work with a person who has a Confederate flag. I can still hang out with a person who identifies as, you know, what do they call them? Southern, I don't know what they call them. You know, who identifies as that. I can still hang out with that person. I can hang out with a racist. I mean, a blatant racist. I do not care. That's just me. I don't care. We'll talk all day. We just won't talk about that. And then the thing is, you open up their eyes and allow them to know. This is what you do with racist people, white or black racist people. White or black racist people. Yes, I said it. Black people can be racist as well. White or black or Hispanic racist people, this is what you do to them. You show them that you are not the stereotype they saw on television or that they heard from their grandparents or parents that made them think that all black people are the same and that all Hispanic people are the same or that all white people are the same. That is what you do. That is what we are not teaching our children nowadays. No. Some people are allowing one bad experience to mold their entire lives. That is what they are doing. They're allowing one bad experience to mold their entire lives. You understand what I'm saying? Black dude goes to jail. False imprisonment, you know, goes to jail, not false imprisonment, goes to jail for a crime he didn't commit. He comes out mad at every white person because a white cop arrested him, you know. That's how it happens. That's how you get, that's how certain things start. You know, a white woman gets mugged by a black dude. Now she hates all black people. A Hispanic guy gets rear-ended by a black guy. And next thing you know, he hates all black people because he thinks all black people can't drive. You know what I'm saying? That's how racism tends to start. Some incident happens. All right. Or you're brought up or you're led to believe that all people of this certain skin tone are this particular way. Now, I went to Psychology Today. It's a website for psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists and things of that nature. And I found a article that I really like. It's written by John Staddon, Staddon. All right. He has a PhD in adaptive behavior. Woo. This was written. What am I doing today? What is going on? This was written October 7th, 2017. That says racism is everywhere. Is it? Really? So he goes on to talk about how, you know, things happen, like in classrooms, how a fat kid is called fatty, a bald guy is called curly, a red-haired kid is called carrot top. You know, is that racism? No, it's not. But in today's day and age, they would call that racist, you know? And I'm like, so gingers are now a particular race and breed. So saying anything about a ginger person is racist. Fat people are a particular race and breed. So saying anything about fat people is racist. No, that's just, you know, talking about their lifestyle choices. I know, I'm fat with diabetes. So I know the bad lifestyle choices that fat people can make, you know. And so the article is very informative about race. I mean, about racist and racism, you know. I wish you guys go on, read it. Psychology Today, Adaptive Behavior, Racism is Everywhere. Is it really? Look it up. Read the article. It's phenomenal. Dang, I've been talking for a long time. sorry, I just looked at the time here, and wow. Okay, so I'm not going to go to a commercial break. We're not going to do that. We're just going. I want to explain to you guys what happened and why I've been gone for such a long time, not doing DV radio or any type of radio for that matter. I was in a bad place, people. I was in a funk. I was depressed. I was one of the 22 I was going to be, you know. I really thought that I wanted to kill myself. And it was because I was too tough. That make any sense? I was too tough to try and seek help. I was too tough to tell my own wife that I was going through things. I thought that I was one of the guys who could ignore some of the issues that was running through my head. I thought I was one of the guys who could bear the burdens on my shoulders of everyone without having anyone to talk to. And that put me in a really bad place. I love doing radio. I love doing this. I love talking to you guys. Whether it's something you want to hear or not, I love talking to you guys about anything. And the thing is, I just didn't want to do it. I just felt like it wasn't good enough. I felt like I wasn't good enough. I have 5 children. We all know this. I felt like I wasn't good enough for them. I felt like they would be better off without me. I felt like my wife would be better off without me. And why? Because I put so much on myself and held so much in. This is what a lot of us do. You hold so much in that you don't go and find a healthy way to let it out. That is a problem with a lot of us veterans. We don't know how to let go of a lot of the hurt that we have inside of us. And that can be hurt from deployments. That can be hurt from anything. PTSD, you know, anxiety, depression. It can be hurt from anything that we don't know how to let go. And one thing that, you know, my therapist, yes, I'm going to a therapist now, because guess what? Real men seek help. Real men seek help. And that's what I want all you guys to understand. Real men, real women, we seek help when we need help. I did not understand that. I did not know that. And the problem was I began to act out and do stupid things within my household. I did. When I did not want to seek the help. But now that I am seeking the help, I'm getting the help. I want you guys to understand that you can get the help as well. All right. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to talk to someone. Don't talk to me. I'm not going to help you because I don't know how to help you. But seek the people that know how to help you. And that's what I did. And so now I'm back. It's 2019. And I know this first show might not have been the greatest show. Whatever. I don't care. Inbox me. All right. You can follow me on Facebook at DV Marquee. You can email the show at, guess what, LimaCharlieRadioShow@gmail.com. I still haven't changed it, and I won't. And that's what you can email the show at, LimaCharlie phoneticalphabet@gmail.com. And no, I didn't spell out phonetically because guess what? I don't like the phonetic alphabet. Too much stuff to say. With that being said, you know what's coming up next. It's Barracks Talk. I love you guys. You guys have a great night and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Peace.
Radio.